Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators podcast. We're here again with Tim Dabney, one of our own, and last time we were together, we spoke about a theology of risk. What can, you know, how to prepare our hearts and how to be ready for the mission field where sometimes things can go sideways. And it's a great study. We encourage you to tune in and download that. But today we're moving into a new area. We're going to go into the types of incidents that can threaten a ministry, the very things that can happen. So Tim, what would you say are the things that can happen to people on the mission field?
Well, typically when people, as Americans, we think very romantically about the mission field and going to the mission. And we always think of the worst case scenario, that you're gonna be attacked by terrorists, or you're gonna be imprisoned for your faith, or you're gonna be persecuted for your faith. And the reality is that although those things do happen in our world, and to some extent they're happening more frequently, that the more run-of-the-mill, generic type of incidents that would sideline you as a worker for the gospel and as a representative of Christ and his message are more run-of-the-mill. Things like illnesses and accidents, criminal acts, natural disasters, regime changes and different types of government changes or rogue governments and geopolitical events. And then, you know, later down the road in terms of statistics, you look at the things like terrorism or genuine persecution. But, you know, just looking at biblically some of the things that we can point to, Paul was warned about the storm when they were crossing the Mediterranean Sea. And yet he tried to warn the captain of the ship and the centurion, and they made a decision. And although there was no loss of life, but there was an attempt to like change course in terms of whether they should go to sea on that day or not. And in retrospect, Paul's speaking up with what he had been given glorified God, because they saw that this is a man who had insight as to what God's plan was for all of them on the ship. And, you know, we talked last time about Joseph and the famine and how that's a contingency plan. And those are types of natural disasters that can sideline a ministry. So just looking kind of in the order of most common events to the more rare events, starting with illnesses and accidents. If someone is going to the field, particularly those people who are considering going long term, you know, things that happen, like if you get a cold here, or you go to the doctor, or if you have an infection, you go to the doctor, it's pretty much a routine thing for us here in the United States. Or if you get in a car accident or fall off your bicycle, it's a simple trip to the doctor, and it's really not that big a deal. You might have to in some law enforcement involvement, but in another culture, it could turn into a horrendous event, and there could be cultural miscommunication. There could be damaging of your reputation, depending on if it's an accident and there's other people injured that are indigenous people. There could be prejudices that are not the fault of the missionary that come into play. So those things need to be thought about. So what I challenge people who are going to the field to do is to do their own research. They should certainly have done some reconnaissance and gone on short-term missions to where they're planning to do their work, but they should be speaking to the nationals. They should be making contact with people that share their professional expertise, especially if they're not going as a pastor, if they're going as like a business's missions or something other than that. They should be talking to the people in the community where they're going to serve about what are the most common types of illnesses that people get, what are the most common type of accidents that occur. And then I ask them to research there are reports that are provided by the State Department that every other year, every country has what it calls a crime and safety report, where they will line out the crimes committed against Western travelers in those regions. And so look at the criminal acts. So if the criminal acts committed against Western expatriates are things like robbery at ATMs or carjackings, etc., you can take steps to mitigate those by the times of day that you go to the ATM, by you know, having your family do like a play, if you're taking your children and a family, have run through a scenario of what a carjacking is like so that nobody overreacts and gets hurt during that criminal act. So look at the three top criminal acts taken against Westerners and just kind of walk through them. It's as simple as something that we all are encouraged to do at our homes here in the U.S. It's like we should do a fire drill at our home, right? You see it on TV. It's like, oh, you should. And how many of us have ever done it?
I don't think I ever have.
Yeah. So like if your family has been through a fire drill, we did it when we were kids. We know you line up and you go out to the recess area and you're on the blacktop in your little spot. Well, the reason why they walk you through that is so that you don't got to think about it when it really happens.
That's right.
Because you know that's what you're supposed to do. That's right. So if you know that one of the top three crimes, and in fact, I think, wasn't there an incident where you were almost carjacked in Kenya?
We did, and we had prepared for the carjacking. It's a little bit funny. As much as we prepared, even in the preparation, it kind of went sideways on us. We came around a corner, and they came at us with guns, and they were coming to get us, and we prepared, and I yelled duck, which was the key word for our family, and my kids in the back seat knew to fold in and get low in case there was gunfire. Of course, they banged their heads on the way down, and then they began fighting because they were kids. And my wife sat up straight and said, duck, it's night, there's no ducks out. She started looking for a duck. I said, no, carjacking. And then everybody went back into mode, and we actually were able to evade the situation. But
yeah.
But had we not prepared, it could have went very differently. It could have been a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, and you could have been caught unaware and unprepared mentally.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so there was preparation for that.
Yeah. And in other realms, you'll hear people use the term situational awareness.
That's right.
And part of situational awareness is just being aware of your surroundings. It's very simple. Keep your head on a swivel and like know what's going on around you, but also having a mental preparation. So as you get to know the place where you're serving, run through scenarios in your mind. You know, if I went to the ATM and a guy came up behind me to rob me, what would I do? You know, would I turn and give him the money? Where would I run if I was trying to get away?
Yeah.
And have, just think those things through. And not only could they save your life, but they could save your ministry. And those types of things. Now, moving on to natural disasters, you know, we also see many biblical examples where natural disasters are prepared for, contingency plans are drawn up, and preparations are made. And I think I'll just share with you off the cuff that in my career in law enforcement over the 30 years, I love natural disasters because cops are not always the heroes. But that's the time when we get to be the heroes. That's when people who are stuck in the middle of a floodplain and we can go out there and wade in the water and rescue them, we get to be the firemen for a day. Because everybody loves firemen. I don't know why. They get paid to sleep. But but the thing about natural disasters is if you do the research on where you're going to serve and you know what the most probable natural disasters are, a good friend of mine who teaches in law enforcement, he uses the term, if it's predictable, it's preventable. And to a certain extent, and he's talking about vicarious liability and exposing your organization, but in the sense of natural disasters, if it's predictable, it's preparable.
Yeah, well said.
So you can put aside provisions, so you can actually use the disaster as a catapult for the gospel and for the ministry. Just a few minutes ago, you and I got a phone call from a very good friend of ours who does ministry in the 1040 window.
That's right.
And there was a major earthquake in that country, and his organization responded in a way that many people came to Christ because of the light of the gospel that found its way into people's hands in a bowl of rice. And not that they're rice Christians, But yet they saw that this group of Christians were prepared for what everybody knew was inevitable.
That's right.
I mean, we live in California, and we all talk about the big one. But do we really prepare? And as churches, as Christians, shouldn't we be prepared to show the love of Christ to our neighbor? And so we should be setting something aside for ministry, even here.
Yeah.
So as you look at the natural disasters of probability where you're going to serve, prepare and share that preparation with the people that you're serving, the indigenous people that you're ministering to, so that they can reap the blessing of serving others as well.
Yeah, so often in the Bible, the disasters that we see, particularly you gave example in our last podcast of the famine brought in the days of Joseph, that was actually a way the gospel was opened up to people that otherwise would not have had the gospel. So as unfortunate as it may seem on one level, on the other level, it's a way to reach into cultures that we may not otherwise have access to. And you come with the blessings of Christ, and people are open. It's a good time.
Yeah, and absolutely. And God's majesty is displayed even in what we would consider cataclysmic events of our environment.
Yeah, that's right.
And that they're beyond our control.
That's right. But being prepared allows us to shine the light of Jesus into situations that people are desperate.
They are. Yeah, and it's an excellent point. The next most likely thing to happen, so those first three categories, illnesses and accidents, you should be prepared for, because they're going to happen to everyone. And so when you get in country, make sure you've got your medications, make sure you're prepared, make sure you have a plan. What if you get in a car accident? Where do you go? Who do you talk to? Is it the type of nation you're serving in where a trip to the embassy is warranted? Or is it the type of country where the person you had an accident with, you give them $100 and say, God bless you? You need to know those things before it happens.
That's right.
You need to know the top three criminal acts, and you need to know the top three types of disasters that could hit your area and prepare for those so that you can shine the light of the gospel in those times. So next we look at things like regime change, geopolitical events, and rogue governments. Now this, In the 21st century, this seems to be the headline in every newspaper of a different day. There's a new government, and there's a president being deposed, and a leader being taken out, and another one being propped up. It seems to happen everywhere. So really, these are types of areas where you really want to be in touch with the local people that you're serving, so that they know probably better than anyone.
Yeah.
They know better than your best analyst in the DIA or the CIA, because we look at things, even in the intelligence community, through the Western lens. But these are people who grew up in this society, and so they know that maybe this regime change is not good, but the Western nations are calling it good. And so they can warn you. They could say, this is not a good thing for you in the gospel. And sometimes those regime change, your presence actually brings attention to the people you're trying to serve, and actually can put them in harm's way in terms of being a target to some new regime or a rogue government.
Yeah, the very people you go to minister to now are in danger because of your presence.
Correct.
It's probably time to move on.
Yeah. And so just as a simple thing, one of the things that, and you know, as we move through these issues, this is by no means like a training seminar.
Right.
This is just to bring up issues for people to think about and seek out training and seek out their own research on what they should be preparing and how they should be preparing. So if they want to call the office here and ask us for any references or have questions about any of these topics, we'd be happy to take their calls. So
I'm glad you said that, Tim. As much as we would love to download as much information as we can here on a podcast, it's in no way sufficient. And
no.
So what we would love is contact through our internet, ssmfi.org, or find us on Facebook, and we would love to, you know, go deeper with you and help you prepare contingency planning for the ministry you are called to.
Yeah. So when we look at rogue governments and regime changes, I think the last thing I would say about this is that as as we are serving abroad and we are interacting with government officials, one of the questions, and I think that it falls in line with what Christ did when during his ministries, is that as we're involving ourselves with local government, depending on where you're serving, and that's a big question, is like depending on the cultural atmosphere of where you're serving, an appropriate question to ask the government officials is, how can we help you make our community better? My son serves abroad in a country, and it's not a closed country by any means. It's in Eastern Europe. And I challenged him to go down to the police department and ask the police chief, say, what could we do as a Christian fellowship to make our community better? And they welcomed that. And speaking as a former police chief, I can tell you, I don't know how many times Christian organizations came and set up operations in a park or did a closed off a street, and they never touched base with us, never let us know what we were doing. So the cops always just assumed they knew what they were doing. But yet, how much better would it be to work hand in hand with those resources and actually leverage what you're gonna do? In many cases, you'll find that for the sake of the neighborhood, they want to support what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the gospel brings healing.
Yeah.
So with regard to that, moving on to even more rare things like terrorism, I suggest that everyone who goes abroad subscribes to what the State Department calls is the STEP program. It's the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. That's it, yeah. Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. But STEP is the acronym. And they, what they do is you put into the database the country that you're going to and how long you're going to be there, or it can be open-ended. And there's a federal law that says if you're coming from the United States, they have anything they send as far as warnings to embassy employees have to be sent to Americans who are abroad as well. So by being enrolled in that program, they send you the automatically to your email address anything that's going to come into that country, whether it be the Zika virus, whether it be Ebola that's moving your direction, malaria, could be a natural disaster, could be a rolling wave of gang activity, or it could be regime change. So those kinds of emails go out every day, and there's at least on any given day 40 or 50 of those emails at different countries. So, yeah.
And I've seen in some of the countries where they take it to a new level and they break the country up into wards. And so you have a ward in there who will send out text messages. Hey, there's been there's rioting on this corner. Avoid this. And so it can be really almost up to the minute. And in some of these countries, the media isn't going to serve that purpose for you, but others are going to get you on a text or an email chain. And it's a real safety issue where you're able to keep up with what's happening around you.
And like we mentioned before, listen to the locals.
Yeah.
If the local people that you're serving are looking at you and they're saying, well, I wouldn't do that if I were you, then you probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, and when we do use our careless with the resources that we've been given, and that would be our life, the locals just shake their head and go, well, is this what the gospel's about, is being careless?
It's not a good witness.
It's not. It's not.
Well, it strikes me interesting, you know, terrorism, of course, makes the news, but the biggest threat is illness and accidents. When I you know, of course, tonight on the news, I'm sure there'll be some other terrorist incident, or if not, unfortunately, within the next week, there'll be another terrorist incident. But that's not the biggest threat, is it?
Oh, no. I mean, people talk about Ebola, and Ebola killed, something like 13,000 people, I think. I don't remember the last total. But nobody talks about the 250 to 300,000 people every year that die from the common flu.
Right.
So, Ebola is a very sexy thing for the media. And you remember, it's the media. It's whatever sells advertisement, and whatever is salacious and appealing, then that's what they're going to put out there. And they're not going to advertise that 300,000 people died from the flu, because there's no, like, every... What's there's nothing newsworthy with that because it happens every year.
It's been happening every year.
Every year.
And what's interesting is the largest threats are actually the ones that are the most easy to prepare for. Like I've read that the most dangerous thing most missionaries do is drive.
Correct.
And so a little bit of defensive driving training goes a long ways in those situations, of learning how to drive in the developing nations, especially, you know, some of the ones with very poor infrastructure.
And then lastly, talking about genuine persecution, and we got many examples in the Bible where the apostles were persecuted and Christians were persecuted for their faith. And we have 21st century examples, Pastor Saeed being arrested and imprisoned in Iran, and people who are imprisoned and suffer physical persecution because of their faith. Those are really the rarities, but the key in that type of persecution is to know that this is where God has your calling, and that in that isolation state, and when you are imprisoned for being a representative of the gospel, being secure in the fact that you are a child of God.
Amen.
And that he has not abandoned you, and that he has not forgotten you, that even in your imprisonment, you are serving a purpose, and that you are serving, because how many times in New Testament did Paul become a witness to his captors? We saw that with Joseph. He was a witness to his captors as well. So when genuine persecution comes, that's when God provides the strength to go through it. A lot of times, God, when we have the opportunity to prepare for the more simple things, he wants us to exercise discipline and do that, because we serve a God of order, not a God of disorder. And when we are called to suffer persecution for his sake, what an honor. I mean, it's not joyful. It's not pleasant, but it can be joyful in the honor that you are serving Christ in that way. And so I would just close with that and just say that as you are preparing, or someone is preparing to go abroad, that they should look at geographically, culturally, not just the ministry, but look at all these other factors, the geopolitical factors, whether the illnesses, whether the natural disasters, et cetera, and be prepared to minister in the wake of those things that are going to affect everyone. The gospel tells us that the rain falls on the just and the unjust. And if we are prepared to minister comfort and God's peace when that rain falls, then we are glorifying him and a representation of him.
I like this, Tim. You know, you started off the last session and we had, you know, sort of a theology of contingency, a theology of preparation for what could go wrong. And now as we move into this next section, talking about the types of things that can happen and understanding, you know, what the most likely incidents are and even what the least likely are, it still comes down to a preparation somewhat on the practical side of what we can do to prepare for those, which isn't separate from the theological side either, because it's all about bringing the gospel to those people. Any last thoughts?
No, I just think as we move forward, we can talk a little bit more about, particularly in regime change, what contingency planning looks like. You know, how do you put together a to-go bag? And, you know, what's your window for, and where should you go? So we can ask those kinds of questions in a future seminar or podcast.
Podcast, yeah. Well, Tim, we sure appreciate this. As you just heard, this is a series. We're going to go for at least a couple more sessions, and so we look forward to you tuning in. We also appreciate your feedback. That you could find us at ssmfi.org. That's our website. Look us up on Facebook. Drop us an email. We would love to hear from you, and even hear from you if you have feedback or good suggestions for a future podcast. You never know. We would even love to hear a question, and you may hear us address it here on the podcast. So until next time, God bless you. You've been listening to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast for Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators.